Welcome. According to Vedic understanding, God is approached in three different ways. Through jnana, through yoga, well, four ways actually. Jnana, yoga, karma, and or bhakti. Karma means work or action. So one can become self-realized or God-realized simply by doing your duty, by doing your dharma. Your dharma is that which is a product of your nature, your God-given nature. So if you act in accordance with your nature, by doing the work that is reflective of that nature, of your traits, your dharma. For example, the dharma of sugar is sweetness. Your dharma cannot be separated from you. If you act in accordance with your dharma, then that work can lead you to self-realization and subsequently, over time, moksha, liberation from the wheel, repeated birth and death. That's karma. If you're a yogi or a yogini, like Sinead, then by the practice of yoga, you can also realize God. Many of the yogis, not all, practice yoga, at least historically, in order to gain yogic powers. And all these amazing powers can be attained by the practice of yoga, becoming smaller than the smallest, larger than the largest. Prapti-siddhi means you could reach anywhere in the universe and obtain whatever you want. There's eight of these powers, or siddhis. So that's the yogic path. If you're a little more advanced, then you realize God within the heart through the practice of yoga. God sits there in the heart as the super soul. You're the soul. God's the super soul. Jnana means knowledge. If you're a jnani, you like to realize God. You prefer to realize God through the cultivation of knowledge or philosophical understanding. All right. So that's what appeals to you. Study. The problem with jnanis oftentimes is they speculate too much. On this could be this could mean that, and you know, and sometimes they end up like a dog chasing their tail, sometimes. But still, through the cultivation of knowledge, one can come to realize God. And then, the last of the four is bhakti. Bhakti is the yoga of love and devotion. So, one realizes God through a loving relationship with God. And this is the one that we stress as we sit here every Tuesday night. Because God is love. And the highest relationship or experience that anybody can attain is that of a loving experience. Whether you're giving, whether you're receiving, or ideally, both. It's an interaction. For people who are too much in the heart or overly sentimental without a philosophical basis, that can create fanaticism or too much zeal. Fanatical. for people who are overly philosophical and analytical, but don't connect the heart with it, then that can create mental speculation. So we need head and heart to be connected, ideally, not just one or the other. So our focus, as I've said many times, from the Vedic point of view and the yogic point of view, is the manifestation of God and the goddess as Krishna and Radha, because they are the ultimate embodiments of love. Okay. On Friday, Venus will move in the sky out of Taurus. So maybe some of that partying mentality, enjoyment mentality, a lustful mentality may calm a little bit as Venus moves into Gemini, which is an analytical and intellectual approach. So Venus will get a little bit more balance, some little more discrimination added to the mix. So that might be a good thing. I noticed that some of us have put on weight in the Venus and Taurus time. Me is what I'm thinking about. It's funny, Venus went into Taurus in the sky, and all of these invitations came in to go to dinner here, to go to dinner there.
You rude to say no.
Well, it is rude to say no if they're your friends or relatives. And then we had friends come from California who were here, was it last week or the week before? And so they were here for a week. They wanted to go to a Voca restaurant absolutely every day. They liked that place. So it's just, that's kind of what happens when Venus moves into a place like Taurus. So Venus is going to Gemini on Friday, so we can withdraw the senses a little bit. On Saturday, the Sun moves into Gemini for everybody for the coming month. And when Sun is in Gemini, there is much more discretion, discrimination, thoughtfulness, contemplation. Anything that you have to do that's intellectual in nature or requires study or communication. Now, I have to temper that statement because Mercury is retrograde right now in the sky. But apart from the retrograde Mercury, Sun and Gemini would normally be a really good time to go on a trip.
Sorry, can you explain, it's retrograde and it's
turned
around the other way?
Yeah, Mercury's retrograde right now until the 19th of June. And it means it's in effect going backwards.
Oh, right.
So that creates problems in communication, travel, organization, machinery, computers, information, contracts, agreements, misunderstanding. What Catherine was telling us earlier about a job offer.
The contract came in exactly 27th of May, which was the time that the retrograde thing began.
And it was a very sketchy job offer.
Mm. I'm excited about it. Yeah.
And details were not forthcoming. And the business, the guy that was offering this to her, this business opportunity, would close the letters with love and his name. It's not your business form for an email or a letter, usually. So that also would be a case of Mercury retrograde. So until June 19th, Mercury will be retrograde. So it's better if you can avoid signing something that's really important. Anyway, Sun will be in Gemini from the middle of June to the middle of July. For those of us born in that period, so that's where Sun... That's Sun in Gemini, it's not Cancer. It's Gemini. And it moves Saturday. What's recommended when the Sun moves, in other words, changes signs... because of the excessive magnetic energy that the Sun is giving off on the day that it moves, which is once a month, as you know, but different day each month, obviously, around the middle of the month in Vedic, around the 21st of the month, according to Western calculation, which we ignore here. We're not supposed to plan big events for such days. It's kind of a day for meditation and contemplation, and if you like chanting mantras to the sun god, such as the Gayatri mantra. Okay, does anybody have any stories, anecdotes, experiences, results of chanting mantras, anything you want to share with us?
40 minutes of Ashputa Namaha, and I was fine. That's all it took.
Om Shri Buddhaya Namaha, that one?
Just started for, did about 1,000 of them or whatever, and that was it. I was fine.
Yeah, that one was, we gave that one for Mercury being retrograde, traveling backwards. In fact, it's on the website under Mercury Retrograde and Planetary Events. And
it's a two-liner, though, isn't it? I had a two-liner from the last
time. Om Shri Buddhaya Namaha.
Is it Om Shri Buddha Namaha?
No, that's me explaining how to pronounce it, probably, on the second line. It's all the same. see, the side benefit of what's happening with that mantra, which... wouldn't have mentioned in the context of that, is that Mercury is the planet that rules the nervous system. So if you're worried, stressed, fearful, if you have anxiety, tension, stress, if you're freaked out, if you're having panic attacks, I mean, that's kind of the far end, but you're getting the benefit of calming the nervous system by chanting that mantra. Directly, you're getting the benefit. Mantras tend to work more effectively than wearing gemstones, although gemstones can work very effectively. So what you'd want to do to pacify the nervous system is look at something green, like everywhere you look out the window. Wear something green. Put a green bulb in your bedside lamp and lay as naked as you can on top of your bed and bathe your body in green light. So that is color therapy. Wear emerald or aquamarine or green tourmaline or peridot, mercury stones, or just chant Om Shri Buddhaya Namaha.
That's pretty good. Om Shri
Buddhaya. Buddhaya.
Buddhaya Namaha. Did you all say? Is that what you do? You get that mantra for?
Yeah, I did. I think it was the last time or the time before. It's on the website. If you go on the website under Planetary Events and you look for Mercury, I think it's the first, first right at the top, Mercury retrograde. If you read that, you'll find that little mantra in there. Good. Did they go? Did they come?
They did, and they've gone off for dinner. They were hungry. We had spotted a piece of land further up the river. We've gone up to see it a couple of times. We won't get the sunrise for over an hour.
Yeah, that's what I thought from there.
So the guy that came over from Germany was a Vastu architect.
Wow.
So we had to see if we were going to get the light from the sun within the first 12 minutes of it rising.
Mm.
Only Molin's in the way.
Oh no, I'm about really making us do that.
Because I know.
Because there's certain rays of the sun that you won't get at all then. And the best rays of the sun are immediately as it appears. And as it shifts,
stopping all the abundance coming into your life if you stop the best rays coming in.
Goes from ultraviolet to infrared, from ultraviolet till noon, from noon infrared. So all the best rays are up until high noon. Mm-hmm. And those are all the nurturing rays of the sun.
He said you could buy it, but it wouldn't be considered a Vastu house, for one, because you're not getting the right sunlight. And two, if you don't get the first sunlight, you won't stay in the house.
Mm-hmm.
He said no matter what, it's almost like a chart that after a certain amount of time, you'll move on, no matter what, even if you've built the perfect house.
And where does it have to go into the front of the house? Or what?
Actually hit the house.
Hit the house up here.
He said this guy from Germany.
He just happened to be here.
Wow.
Anyway, he told me now if you find another place, we can just send the actual coordinates of it, and he'd be able to figure it out from there.
Wow. Wow, it's very handy. Yeah.
It was a good exercise.
Good.
So does that mean you should go to the top of the hill then?
Well, not necessarily. It depends on where the hills are around you.
I've never seen the sunrise normally unless I'm on a beach or something by mistake.
Yeah.
No, it's like...
Ideally, you should...
With the... how many degrees?
Ricardo.
The first 12 degrees of it? How does it work?
First 12 minutes.
Within the first 12 minutes. From the horizon.
Yeah, I was coming over the horizon.
It has to hit your head.
Yeah, and he said trees, that's okay. If trees are in the way, it's not a big problem. But if you have a mountain or a big hill in the way, it's like, eh.
Yeah, because it'll come through the trees. Okay. I thought I would.
What's we doing? Start building on the sentiment strands.
Yeah, pretty much.
I thought I would read a little bit from the Mahabharata.
Most people won't follow. You know, they're not aware of it. You know, I mean, of course. But if you have the knowledge, why not do it?
The Mahabharata is 100,000 verses. Within the Mahabharata is the Bhagavad Gita, the conversation between Krishna and Arjuna, which is a very small part of the Mahabharata. This is the unabridged edition of the Mahabharata. There are four books this size. And that's only the English. The Sanskrit doesn't even appear in this book. It's got all kinds of really good stuff in it. And it was recorded 5,000 years ago. Or spoken around that time. So, just some things that I thought I'd share with you. The highest form of penance or austerity or sacrifice is abstention from food. It's fasting. If you can do nothing else and you want to strengthen yourself spiritually and improve your karma for the next life, then you practice fasting. That's the most powerful thing to do. One should ideally awake from sleep at the hour known as the Brahma Muhurta. And then one can think of focus on meditation and then subsequently on business. Brahma Muhurta is 48 minutes before sunrise. It's very beneficial to be awake before the sun comes up. Just before. Yeah, half an hour. 48 minutes. A Muhurta lasts for 48 minutes. So...
Is the day made up of Muhurtas?
Yeah. Rising from bed, one should then wash the face and mouth, joining one's hands in an attitude of reverence, say the morning prayers. One should never look directly at the rising sun, nor the setting sun, nor should one look at the sun when he is in eclipse, nor at the reflection of the sun in the water, nor at the sun when he is at the meridian, highest in the sky, which is pretty hard to do anyway. By the way, what I haven't said here, all of this that we're reading here is for lengthening your life. And anything it's telling you not to do shortens the life, has a negative effect. Well, it kind of means, yeah, that's what it says. Mm-hmm. Immediately as it rises or sets. The sages, in consequence of their observing the two twilights of sunrise and sunset, with great regularity succeed in increasing their longevity. So meaning, when you do the Gayatri Mantra, which we've talked about, which is to the sun god, Om Bhur Bhuvasva Tat Savitur Varenyam Bhargo Devasya Dhimahi Dhiyo Yo Na Prachodayat.
That's wonderful. Do you know what I find bad? The Dutch guy? He does that wonderful.
What's his name?
Heinbat. H-E-I-N-B-A-A-T.
So when you do the Gayatri Mantra, you're to do it ideally three times a day. At sunrise, at high noon, or when the sun is highest in the sky, and at sunset. So the sages who do this with regularity will increase their lifespan.
Even in India, actually standing in the water while they're...
Yeah, they stand in
and
there.
And they're picking up the water and they're off and it's off and then they're dunking down. And
they stand up to their waist.
It's amazing to watch them.
People of every order of society, of any and every order, should never have sexual congress with other people's wives or mates. There's nothing that shortens the life so effectually as sexual congress with other people's mates. For as many thousand years will the adulterer have to suffer, as the number of pores on the bodies of the women with whom he may have committed the offense.
So it's only him then?
Well, that's the way it's saying it. Yeah. You know, I mean, you can... The converse is true. You know, it's the he-she thing in English. You know, it's either he or she. That's how it works in English. But, you know, whether you take that literally or not, that's a lot of pores in the body. When one comes upon a large tree that is known or well regarded, the tree is, one should walk around it. It shows great respect in circumambulating, going around a holy place or a statue of the gods, a murti like these. It shows great respect, so including a tree that is well regarded, you also gain the benefit of going around the tree. Always clockwise, yeah? Unless you're going around the Kaaba in Mecca. Then you go counterclockwise. One should never wear shoes or clothing that have been worn by another. This shortens your life.
How far down the children were you?
Yeah, I mean, you don't have to worry too seriously about it, but
that whole idea of sharing, you know, the little things. You know, these sites are actually kind of anti-consumerism, like, you know, the overspending. So, I don't know what it's called, but basically, you don't spend any money for a year except for on food, on something that you really need, or petrol or something. But for example, you don't buy clothes, but you swap clothes with all these other people who are in the same thing, or makeup. Not that you use the same makeup, but you know, all these extra gifts that you get, and you have like tons of makeup that you've never used, you know, books, you just share the books, you pass them books.
Good idea.
It is a good idea, but what about the clothes?
Well, you see, the clothes is your... the person's vibration is going directly into the clothing, and their cleanliness or lack thereof is also going into the clothing, but mainly it's the vibration, and you're being affected by that vibration. I mean, objects take on people's vibration. You can walk into rooms where something terrible is taking place. You never witnessed it, but immediately you walk in, you get a chill, or... Mm-hmm. Right? So, that's what it says. It's not good to swap clothing. So, going down to the St. Vincent's, or what do you have here? Secondhand store.
So, should we stop giving our clothes away then?
Well, giving them away...
maybe you could claim something.
Out of generosity to people who can't afford clothes is a good thing, not a bad thing. Mm-hmm. It would be better for these people who can afford clothes to be given free clothes as opposed to go naked, for example. Mm-hmm. So, and you're not wearing the clothes, they are. Mm-hmm. They're wearing other people's clothing. That's not, it doesn't say anything against that. Mm-hmm. So... one should observe abstinence from sex on the day of the new moon and on the full moon, and also on the eighth day of the waxing or waning moon, and that will increase lifespan.
Most women are fertile between the eighth day and
of the period, not of the moon. Of their cycle.
But if you're in tune with nature, you work on the moon cycle. You work the days of the moon. You menstruate every 28 days when there's a full moon.
Well, and then you wouldn't want to have sex unless you want to get pregnant, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, in that case, but I'm sure you can make an exception if you want to get pregnant. One should never eat the flesh of animals that are not slain for the purpose of a sacred offering. That are not slain for sacrifice.
I'm really glad that this came out tonight, because I have... I'm not a full vegetarian, but I don't eat red meat or chicken. I do eat fish. But lately I've been having loads of red meat cravings.
And
I've had.
She went to me for
TBM.
Yeah.
You
reset her system.
Oh, you
know. Yeah.
You reset her system for burgers?
And I have. You reset her system for burgers?
No. I reset her system, and she made me up all guilty, going, "Do you want to go get a burger?"
Well, actually, so I had these cravings for a burger, and I was like, "Okay, I'm just going to go with it and have them." And I do have to say that surprisingly, it didn't mess up my digestive system, like, you know, all these rumors telling me that it was. And I did feel very physically strong after it. I didn't feel...
Well, you, a person like you who's very physical,
yeah,
would need a good dose of protein, especially because you're doing physical culture as part of your work.
Yeah.
So you can't do without protein. That doesn't mean you need to have beef protein.
I know that, and I've lived about it for ages. But, I mean, there's a part of me that is like, you know, I'm not a full vegetarian. I eat fish. So, like, it's not, it's almost like I'm slightly hypocritical, although I'm getting, like, these cravings to have meat. I'm still not fully sold that I want to go back and eat it, because I do believe in what the scriptures say about animals. And even though I can't stop eating fish, I feel that by not eating red meat or white meat is my contribution.
Yeah.
Towards it.
Well, then you do it a step. Do it a step at a time.
Yeah, and
eventually, yeah. It's purification takes time.
When I went vegetarian full on,
yeah,
I'd have things of chicken nuggets on the bed.
So do you think she needs to offer protein? That's all her body can take.
Well, probably, yeah. Because some people who have you no doubt have a strong Mars, which we'll find out, but some people need a lot more protein, especially if they're very energetic, they're physical in nature, they burn a lot of energy, you know.
I could have steak 3 times a day.
There you go.
And I could burn it.
Yeah, so like that. You know, I would never recommend them to eat meat myself, but they have to have a strong source of protein. They can't neglect it. And other people, they don't need as much protein. I know a guy who's 59 years old. And this guy's waist size is about the same as it was when he was 21. Because he just burns it off. You know. He'd have metabolism similar to yours. All right. One should never pierce another with words that are like arrows. One should never utter cruel speech. One should not speak words that trouble others or that are inauspicious. Words like arrows fall from the mouth. People who are pierced by such words, such victims grieve day and night. A person of wisdom should never shoot such words with the intent of piercing others. This is kind of written in an old style, so I'm sort of trying to update it as I go here. A forest pierced with shafts or cut down with an axe will grow again. But a person pierced with sharp words becomes a victim of wounds that fester and ultimately lead to death.
It festers in the person.
Ultimately lead to death. No, the person who's hit by them. Words that are like arrows are incapable of being extracted, pulled out, for they lie embedded in the very heart of the victim. So it just shows the importance of speaking thoughtfully, gently, considerately, because people will drop statements and they can have a much, much more serious effect than one realizes. it is of the nature of the Irish people that they love to take the piss, which is all great fun, sort of. Especially when everybody's sitting around and having drinks, it becomes even more fun. So I get that on that level. But it can be hurtful to some people, even though it's meant in jest.
What about being on the receiving end of arrow speech? Do you stand up to it, or do you walk away from it? Or...
It depends whether you want to say something or not. If it's an ongoing relationship with somebody and it continues over and over again, at some point you may want to say something. If it's a one-off thing, or, you know, it doesn't happen that often, the best course of action may be just to cut it loose. I had this astrologer send me a very, how shall we say, a critical and upbraiding email. I mean, very condescending toward me, because I had sent a mailer out to my clients and he didn't agree with something that I said. I don't even know the man. And somehow it ended up in Canada, where this guy lives, right? Which nowadays, of course, it could be anywhere, everywhere. And the guy wrote me back about a page long email and sliced and diced me. Yeah, I guess so. And I wrote him back and I said, "Thank you very much for your kind opinion. Warmest regards, Drew Lawrence." That's what I said. And then he replied again and he said some things more critical. Shorter this time. And I replied back the same way I replied first time. Because I'm not going to take it on. And I'm not going to meet him on his level.
Yeah. But you would be more able for that.
I could have carved him up six ways from Sunday.
Yeah.
But there's no need.
But actually, with this particular man, I just see such a lack of respect.
Well, like I say, if it's an ongoing thing, then you should speak up. This guy, I don't know. And I may not, with any luck, I'll never hear from him again.
Yeah.
But if this is an ongoing thing with this guy that you're dealing with,
he's having a canary over there.
Yeah,
because I wouldn't engage, you see.
Yeah, but you do it in a
passive,
very passive. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, that's how I do it. I do it like this. I just pat him on the head and say, "There's a good boy now."
Yeah.
Run along.
Works best. Warmest
truth. Warmest regards.
Yeah.
Heartfelt. Okay. One should eat only such food as is not forbidden. Abstaining from food of all kinds on the day of the new moon and the full moon. So, now, you're not going to drop dead if you eat on the full moon or the new moon, let's be clear. But it's recommending that those are ideal days to fast. That's what it's doing, okay? One should never eat while...
standing.
What?
Driving.
I didn't think they had coffee.
Yes, would be saying, but this is walking. Yeah, no, you don't eat while walking.
It is,
first of all, no offense, it's very low class to eat while walking.
Well, I am ghetto then. When
you eat, you are taking in life and life force and nourishment, and it should be on some level a meditation and a sense of gratitude, because you're giving thanks for this nourishment. And people who are walking and eating are not thinking about what they're eating. They're not being here now. Their mind is on something else. This is just being stuffed in while I'm busy doing other things. And that's one of the problems in our modern day world is the fast food culture. And subsequent to this fast food culture is there's a lot more indigestion. Acid reflux seems to be the popular thing on TV these days. Mm-hmm. Acid reflux medicines, heartburn medicines, stomach upset medicines. And here in America, every commercial is medicine. Every commercial is drugs in America.
Yeah.
So, because we're going, we're always, this is multitasking. I'm going to eat, I'm going to walk, and I'm going to talk on my mobile at the same time. Yes? Have you seen it?
Yeah.
Have you done it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Not good. Not good. Old people should be saluted or well regarded. One should, upon seeing them, offer them seats. That's simple respect. One should never sit on a seat that is ripped or broken. Yes, throw out the old chair. Yeah, a torn seat or a broken seat. Now, here's one that's going to throw you again, like the clothes.
The bed.
One should never touch the remnants of other people's dishes and plates. People eat off other people's plates. Or are you finished with that? Oh, here, come here, bring, give it to me.
Sharing, that's great fun when you get a load of different things together. And
I do it. We've done it regularly many times.
It's different if they're all in the center and you're pulling them off rather than going from each other.
Then we're all actually sharing the remnants of each other's plate in that case.
What, if you're taking a dish from the center?
If there's one, yeah, there's one dessert and everybody's...
Doesn't everybody eat like that? Indians eat like that all the time. They have a big central dish in the middle of the floor and they just eat.
No, Indians don't do that.
Don't they?
No, Muslims do that.
Muslims do
that. By eating off somebody else's plate, you are imbibing their vibration. Now, what is recommended is to take the remnants off the plate of a high soul. Yeah. So when we offer...
So, Clindy, we don't have dinner there.
When we offer the food officially in a ceremonial manner...
And you put it back in.
And we put it on the altar for the gods, then we take it off and we... put it back into the pots, and now that food is prasadam or mercy or from the remnants of God's plate. That's fine. To eat off or to have a little piece of the remnant of the plate of a very high soul or realized soul is also considered to be very good, because you will imbibe that soul's consciousness, because his energy is on the food, because he ate off the plate. So, you know, how many times do mothers eat off their children's plates? I mean, countless times. So we're not talking about that so much. But, in other words, think twice about whose plate you're reaching for. So you're saying, oh God, I really like that rice dish. I wish there was more. And the only more is on that person's plate who's not eating it. Do you really want to eat off that person's plate? That's what you should ask yourself. Same as the clothes. One should never take a meal without eating some sesame. Sesame seeds are considered to be a very, very high vibration and very sacred food.
Says who?
Says me. So, me, myself, I love sesame, but I do not eat it at every meal.
You didn't get that out of the book.
It's in the book.
What's in the book?
It's in the book.
Come up with them, that's
in the book.
Oh, yeah. Great for a
Yeah.
The sesame farmer paid to the garden.
Yeah.
It
only was
It kind of... I'm just throwing a spanner in the works here, because...
You're not coming back.
Like, I mean, some of it, it's all very controlling.
No, it's not. It's not controlling.
Way to go about the world.
It's, my dear. This is only suggestions.
Okay.
And this, don't forget, this was recorded a long time ago. Okay. But there is
protein or something.
There is some truth to it. Okay. So we're not trying. Let's be clear. We're not trying to beat you over the head with a club with this information, with sesame. All we're trying to do is say that these statements have been offered to, some of them prolong life and some of them to reduce lifespan. Mm-hmm. So I'm suggesting you take them under consideration. Now, this is an interesting one. One that wishes to live a long time should never disregard or insult any of these three. No matter how weak or emaciated these three may appear to be. And they are a Brahmin. Brahmin is somebody who's a priest. Or priest is not like our sense of priest. It means somebody who follows a very high standard of spiritual practice.
Like a monk.
Yeah.
Man, yeah.
A real honest to goodness holy man. That's what we're talking about. Okay.
You're not allowed to walk with him?
Hang on. A Brahmin or a Kshatriya. A Kshatriya would be a real honest to goodness warrior or king. You know, somebody who really.
Protector.
You know, a very noble sort of person. Okay. Not the Garudi from Donegal.
Nelson Mandela.
Yeah, and the third one, the snake. So one that wishes to be to live long should never disregard or insult the holy man, the warrior, or the snake. All three are endued with virulent poison. The snake, if angry, burns the victim with only a glance of its eyes. So he's saying that you don't even have to be bit by the snake. If he looks at you and he's angry, it's going to have an effect. That's what it's saying. The warrior, also if angry, burns the object of his wrath as soon as he sees him by virtue of his energy. So the warrior, with his eyes looking at you, will also burn you. In some way. He doesn't have to strike you. That's what he's saying here. Alright? But the Brahmin, the holy man, is stronger than these other two. The Brahmin can destroy the object of his wrath. Not only the object of his wrath, but the guy's entire race as well. Not by his vision. He doesn't have to see you, but by his thought alone. That's the power of the holy man. So he's saying here that the holy man is more powerful than the other two. For while the other two cannot injure except if they have you within their sight, the holy man can do so even by not seeing the enemy, the offender. Interesting. Just interesting. So people who have spent a lot of time in practice of yoga, meditation, mantra, prayer. Not bad people, good people. You don't want to get on the wrong side.
A client of yours is a goddess. She's a yoga teacher. I've never seen a woman with eyes like anyone else.
Yeah, yeah.
But you can just see how strong fire. It is.
Yeah.
Just in a nice way.
Yeah, the fire pours out.
Her power in her eyes is just incredible.
Now, of course, for some of these things, they don't tell you why. One should not wear garlands of what color flowers?
Red.
Correct. But one should wear garlands, ideally of flowers that are what in hue?
Green, white or pink.
White. White is ideal. Now, we don't wear garlands. In India, people wear garlands. That's very, even today, still very common. You'll notice that Lakshmi and Krishna are wearing garlands. But they are wearing garlands. Yeah, they're white flowers. Okay. Nor should one wear clothes worn by another. There it is again. Okay. The flesh of goats, cows, and peacocks should never be eaten. Goats, cows, and peacocks.
The
flesh of goats, cows, and peacocks should never be eaten.
The Greeks eat goats, don't
they? That explains it. Just kidding. Just kidding. Again, it says, one should also abstain from the flesh of animals that have not been slain in sacrifices for a sacred purpose.
That's what kosher is.
One should, with concentration, yes, that is what kosher is.
Really?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So would it be okay to have a kosher hamburger?
Is there such a thing?
Well, but that's
amazing. Well, yeah. There you go.
You've
made your fortune.
Yeah, well, this is a much higher standard than kosher.
The thing is, it's blessed, though. That's
yeah.
Isn't
it?
Yeah.
Blessed. You're acknowledging the animal's life.
One should, with concentrated attention, eat once in the morning and once in the evening. According to Vedic understanding, there's no three meals a day. Mm-hmm. There's two. And if you're a real yogi,
one. Yeah.
You have one. Abstaining entirely from food in the interval. So in other words, no snacking, no eating between meals. One should never eat any food in which one may detect a hair.
Ew.
Especially at a restaurant. All right, so those are some of the recommendations from the Mahabharata in order to expand and not decrease lifespan, and in order to expand auspiciousness and good fortune in your life. All right, so now we will have some meditation. All right. Close your eyes, breathe, relax, and let go. Allow the stress, tension, fear, and apprehension to drain from your body totally. Completely relax. Breathe. And let go. Deeply, deeply relax. Breathe. And let go. High above, a beautiful beam of radiant light comes down, down, all the way down, entering through the top of your head, expanding throughout your head, torso, arms, legs, out the bottom of your feet, or out the bottom of your base chakra, and into the earth below. Breathe, relax, and see and feel yourself by means of this light connected to the heavens and grounded in the earth below. Breathe, relax, and let go. Deeply, deeply relax. You're in a foreign land amidst archaeological ruins, and you're exploring the ruins. And you come upon a cave or a passageway of some kind. And you enter this cave or passageway. And it goes down, down, very gently descending, deeper and deeper into the rock inside this mountain, until you come to a very large cavern or open space. There's a torch at your feet and matches, which you have in your pocket. You pull out the matches. You light the torch, and you are in this wondrous cavern. And on the walls, there is a dramatic painting. There is painting on the walls. And the painting carries a deep and profound message for you. It's something you need to know. What do you see? If you cannot see, then sense it. What do you sense? Or what do you feel? Examine the painting on the wall in as much detail as possible. What is its message for you? Will you accept that message? Will you take it on? Are you willing to incorporate this in your life? Continue with the meditation until you've completed these steps. When you're finished, please return to consciousness, exiting the cave into the sunlight and awakening feeling refreshed, relaxed, and at peace.